Back to Bishop Hill on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Rebecca Wee.
And I'm Don Wooten. Bishop Hill is observing its 175th anniversary, and Mary David Saver is writing about Bishop Hill. We'll chat with her today on Scribble. You just won't leave these people alone, will you?
No, I will not.
But you've written about Swedes on the Titanic.
No, that's not me. That's Lily Setterdahl.
That's right. That's Setterdahl, right. Mm-hmm. That's right. You concentrated on Bishop Hill.
Yes. Well, she does fiction. She does nonfiction. Mine is fiction because I lived there for 24 years. I kind of got used to being there, not being, a descendant myself. Mm-hmm. But I talked to a lot of them and heard the stories, seen the buildings, and it just... became part of me, I guess.
Well, I guess Setterdahl and David Saver are the chroniclers of all things in that area. But you have not written a mystery, Shadows Over Bishop Hill. How did that come about?
Well, my first book, 5 years ago, last time I was here, Clouds Over Bishop Hill, that was a cozy mystery, my first book. And I kind of took a chance with this one. It's taking up the same timeline where I left off with the first book. I wasn't sure I was going to stick with that, but yes, it is still a cozy mystery. We have a lot of the same people, some new ones, some new villains, of course. Gotta have some new villains.
Villains have to be introduced and disposed of, don't they?
Yes, yes. I was a little wishy-washy with that on the first book, but I tried to do better.
Uh-huh.
For this one, yes.
What does it take to write a book? I mean, from the beginning, I mean, the idea occurs to you, and what do you think prompts that?
Well, the first idea was art, the Olof Kranz Museum in Bishop Hill. I used that as part of my plot. And I knew when I finished that one that the next one had to be about money. Because, my timeline is in 2008, summer, and that is when things were starting to hit the fan with the coming Great Recession, shall we say. And Bishop Hill at one point had its own money. They brought it back from Nebraska. And 1857, because Bishop Hill, some colonists went out for the gold rush and came back.
Sure.
And they brought this. It was their big investment because at that time, a lot of banks, a lot of institutions printed their own money. So they invested heavily in this and then kind of, well, as I say in the book, lost their colony shirts.
Yeah. A lot of people went under with that. The big guys didn't, but everybody else did.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how the big ones are always insulated from these things.
Isn't that interesting? Because, that comes through here. I tried really hard, with computer terminology to be accurate, but not so detailed that it would be dated really fast. But I did a lot of research. I read The Big Short by Michael Lewis.
Great book. Great book.
Oh, you've read it?
Yes.
Good. Because it's nonfiction, right?
That's right. I'm a great nonfiction guy.
Well, I used that to establish a timeline, and it worked out perfectly because, there was going to be awareness of the money situation and the coming mortgage problem. And in June, which is, you know, in my timeline, two people were going to trial for being Bear Stearns, you know, heads of the subprime hedge funds.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, let me go back to this. What prompted you to start writing in the first place?
I just liked it. I can't say as I had a start as a young kid, like some people do. You know, they spend their youth writing poetry and such, you know, short stories. I came to it later in life through different means. Like I was secretary for several clubs and organizations, and it's something I really liked. And then I was tapped by the editor of the Galvin News to write some features. And that really got me going. And then there was a contest with the Moline Dispatch back when it was a bigger paper, sorry to say. And I was a guest columnist for a summer.
Yeah.
And that was really informative for me because I'd written a few short things for the paper, but not in first person.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
You know, the feel of an essay. So that was a good experience for me.
But writing things like that, I write a column, and I've never been motivated to write a novel.
Well, I was standing in front of the Steeple Building one day thinking about, yeah, I would like to do more than, you know, 700-800 words. And I looked at the building and, okay, preservation has to be a theme for me. Bishop Hill has to be a character. And for the first book, you know, I used the art for Olaf Kranz. And I already thought about the money angle. Third book, don't know.
But you did know the second book as you
were
writing the first?
I had an idea, a rough idea, but okay. There was a lot I didn't know. And plus, I hadn't written, you know, 5,000 words or 50,000 words even. And that's when National Novel Writing Month really came in to help. Because, you know what, I got through the first month and I had 50,000 words. They weren't really great words, but it did prove that I could do it. And I took classes and workshops with the Midwest Writing Center.
Okay.
And that helped a lot also.
Yeah.
And they are very encouraging. And actually, they published my first book. They didn't publish the second one because I was in too big of a hurry. I was running out of time. 'Cause the first one was out for the 170th anniversary of the colony. And this one is going to make it for the 175th, so, you know.
Yeah. You've got a sort of built-in schedule, don't you?
Well, at least for those two.
For those two, yeah.
And it's interesting. As I went in to drop off posters for this book, the second book, Shadows, I ran into a petition for people to sign and try to promote and save the state sites. Some of the colony buildings are owned by the state of Illinois, Illinois Historic Preservation Agency. And I was just really amazed because I have so many times in my time in Bishop Hill that has come up, you know, saving the buildings because you just can't let them go.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, you know, I was involved in some of those issues back when I was in the Senate, and it really offended me that when anyone would propose that the state hand over property, I thought, no, we shouldn't do that. This property belongs to the people, so we are responsible for it. We have to keep it. We have to maintain it. But those issues never go away.
No.
And it's, I don't know, there's something about property. The Native Americans think that when the white people came over, they were crazy thinking they could own land.
Mm-hmm.
the Great Spirit owns the land, and we just occupy it for a while, and then...
I need to take care of it,
and somebody else will take over. But we became fixated on owning land, owning pieces of land.
Mm-hmm.
And state property sitting there looks like something, well, why don't you just sell it? And, you know, you can help have a little more money in your treasury, and I can do something with that. I can use it and make money.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep a watchful eye on state property.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. But you wrote the second book, and give us a sample of it.
Okay.
Give us a little reading. Well, the book is a mystery.
Yes.
Without giving the story away, can you tell me what the kernel of the novel is?
Well, okay. My protagonist, Shelley Anderson, is 22 years old. She's just graduated from Knox College. She's come home for a summer job, and things are not going well in her life. So we have her growth, her voyage to adulthood. Okay, it's not really coming of age as she's gaining experience as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And is she based on anybody?
I
mean, it's interesting because you're doing what we call historical fiction, right?
Yes.
So you've got...
I have to be very careful because these are all friends and neighbors.
Sure.
And I've made sure that I make composite characters.
Yep.
I may use something that sounds like somebody's name or their initials, but I try to pick and choose different characteristics and disguise people, you know.
And they know, once they know you're a writer, then they're paying attention to you and saying, is this me? Is this?
Some people have guessed, but they've guessed wrong.
Yes.
So
you're doing it well.
How much of you is in the book?
Probably more than I care to speak of. But because it's hard to get away. You know, there's mommy issues in here, and, you know, can't get away from that.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, I think that certainly every first novel is taken right from a person's life. Have you not discovered that?
Yeah, or as you were saying, you know, something about where you're standing or the building you're looking at or something somebody says. You know, when I'm teaching creative nonfiction here at Augie, we kind of approach one assignment from first person. You know, I'm going to tell something about my life. Another from a portraits. It's about somebody else. Another is about landscape or setting. And they may all evolve into something other than where they started, but you're looking for something, right? You're looking for, the history of a place or the...
Well, give us a sample of the book and tell us about where in the plot we are.
Okay. Let's see. This scene has Shelley Anderson, my protagonist. As I said, 22 years old, college graduate. She is in a car with Marcia Ellen, her cousin, former roommate, and they are driving into Bishop Hill on a little mission.
Okay.
We pass the Lutefisk Cafe, the Colony Church, and the State Park on our right. The large colony-era brick and stucco buildings that made up the heart of Bishop Hill stood out on our left. I instructed her to make a left turn onto Main Street, followed by an immediate left turn onto Erickson Street. We slowly made our way toward our destination. It appeared we were the only ones present as we pulled over to park in front of the desolate house in serious need of repairs and paint. We exchanged nervous looks but remained determined. "Here we go," I said. The subdued palette of shabby grays and browns of Carlson's house suddenly lit up with flashes of red and blue. A Henry County cruiser pulled up behind us and let the light bar grab our attention. I was envisioning yet another trip to Cambridge when Deputy Dana exited the vehicle. We'd built up a kind of rapport over the last few weeks, so I thought it best if I got out first, slowly and carefully, with hands where she could see them. Deputy Dana checked me out, peered into the car at Marcia Ellen, and relaxed enough to take her hand off her gun. Ladies, what do you think you're doing? Nice night. We decided to take a drive, I said. What are you doing here? The deputy summarized the obvious. Badge, uniform. I'm on duty surveilling the residence of a person of interest while patrolling my zone. The Oxboy cabins were up next. Oh, so you haven't been here the whole time, I said. We don't have resources to devote round-the-clock stakeouts unless there's an urgent need. Then you haven't checked the doors lately, I said. You know, to see if they're still locked. Look, they're closed, aren't they? When we turned to look at the front door, we saw Marcia Ellen already there, peering through the old wavy glass. What is she doing? Get back from there. Is this an active crime scene? I inquired. Not yet, Deputy Dana said through clenched teeth. She shook her head and made an attempt to loosen up. Okay, no, it isn't. Then we're here to pay a neighborly visit to Mr. Carlson. Ask him how he is. You know, stuff like that. I edged around so I faced the house, and the deputy didn't. And ask what he was doing last week. Maybe, I said. I really have been trying to get a hold of him for business reasons. With you? I find that hard to believe. With Knickerbo, I reassured her. He's interested in arranging something to go along with his coin business. Look, we don't need a crowd here, Deputy Dana explained as she turned back to the house. Where did she go? I trailed after as she stomped along the side of the house. She'd better not be inside. We caught up with Marcia Ellen by the back of the house, which was standing ajar. Did you open that door? Deputy Dana demanded. No, ma'am, Marcia Ellen said and bent her head to listen. I think I hear something. Oh, come on. That is so old, so lame. She's right, I said. I do hear something. Someone's in there. I started for the door and was roughly pulled back. Deputy first. She reached for her weapon and stay behind me. She must have guessed there was no way we would stay outside by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So, you... couple of nosy women here finding or blundering into something.
Well, that's what a cozy mystery takes.
How long did it take you to do the book?
Well, okay, the first one took 7 years off and on.
Oh, my.
This one's 5, and I was pushed a bit because my husband was said, okay, it's time. Get ready. We got to publish.
But, 5 years... That's a long time.
Well, that's okay. I'm a pantser, okay? I don't make out a smooth timeline or outline. I have to figure things out as I go along.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and the person who died first early in the book to get my protagonist hooked on the mystery, it was going to be somebody else early on, and during the course of working things out, I changed that.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Was it I'm always fascinated by students and colleagues who write fiction, because I don't write that genre, where they kind of report their characters taking over, you know, that they start out in one place and
yeah.
then the character starts to talk almost
yes.
to them
yes.
rather than of them. And I think... that's pretty cool. So did that happen, or did you just make a deliberate decision?
I started out with my main themes being preservation
yeah.
and Bishop Hill as a character. So, yes, the characters of the people in the plot evolved separately from that,
okay.
and it took some time. And, yes,
yeah.
as I got to know them better,
uh-huh.
They did speak, and they did kind of say, I should say this here and this over here needs to happen, and you've got to go back and fix things.
Sure. So can people, sorry, Don, can people read the second book without having read the first?
Yes.
Or will it, yeah?
Yes.
It will
still I believe so. So far, no one's complained.
But, yeah.
That's what that was the goal.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, as you move through the book, did you have to go back and redo a lot of things?
Well, the changing who died kind of was a big one. And getting the information about the financial aspects of it, that took some time and some research. And I had to show that to a lot of people to make sure I got that right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, research can be tough, particularly in a field where you are not that comfortable.
Right.
Yeah, and high finance, you know, to me, high finance is a $100 bill. I think, wow.
Yeah, there's a whole world.
This is different from that because they were just doing weird things and playing around with what I consider as imaginary money and, taking big risks.
Now that this is published, and how did you arrange for the publication of it?
Well, I had to publish it myself, basically. I had a business in Bishop Hill, so this is kind of an offshoot of that. But, yeah, I had to learn how to do all of that stuff myself.
Well, that's a big undertaking.
But I had help. I had a lot of good help. So,
did you design the cover, or did you have someone do that?
Well, I had the image in mind that I wanted, because I have got the old money, the old Bishop Hill money is in the background, and I've got this shadowy silhouette of a figure digging, shall we say, close to but not in the cemetery. Mm-hmm. And I, at one of my book writers groups, posed the question, if you see somebody digging, what are they doing? Are they digging something up or burying something? So that's the question.
And I know there's a slash of red there, too.
Yes, there is. So I made a preliminary sketch, and then I got connected with Kate Leah Tui, and she is a recent University of Iowa graduate, and she made it real. She took the cover and gave me what I really wanted.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that is nice. That's a very, very attractive cover. And it is now on sale?
Yes, it is. It is available in Bishop Hill, in Galesburg, in Rock Island. The Artsy Bookworm, just down the street from here, has got it. I'm still working on some place in Davenport yet, and Dubuque.
There's a lot of work. I mean, you write the book, but then you have to kind of shop it.
Yes. Promotion is a big thing, and it is a difficult thing for writers, and it's something kind of gets pushed to the wayside if other life forces are, happening.
Well, now that you've finished number two, are you going to do number three?
I left a little hook at the end. There is possibility, and I've already been to Sweden once, so hopefully I don't have to go back. But yeah, that was one of the requests from some of my readers. I had to make Lars a more of a character, give him a bigger part, and I had to do something with a festival event in Bishop Hill. And
that's interesting. So they're telling you what they want you to work with.
So I'm
accommodating it.
So a trip to Sweden, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Do you have an idea?
Well, when my husband and I were in Sweden, we were touring castles, and do you suppose we could have a people running across the roof there and getting in one window. So we were writing notes. Somewhere in my house, there are some notes. And
boy, you know, it seems to me that you take a very careful and precise approach to what you're doing.
Oh, that's so nice of you to say.
No, well.
Well, it often doesn't feel like it, right, when you're doing the writing.
That's why I have this big book here. It's all my notes that I can put hands on quickly. I try.
I say that in awe because I don't do anything like that. Disorganization is my key.
I don't believe you.
Oh, believe it, believe it. It isn't extempore, it isn't me.
So I have just one question about who you like to read. You must have been, you know, as someone who loves to read, influenced by particular works or writers.
Books I read for this, The Art Forger by B.A. Shapiro, that was very helpful. And I talked to Donald Harstad. He is a writer and former deputy sheriff in Northeast Iowa. Huh. And Tony Hillerman books. I think those are the ones that really got me started. And someone said, you know, if you want to do a book and learn how to plot, do a mystery.
Okay.
And then there's other people that say everything's a mystery. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's true. You know, there are things in people's lives, ordinary people's lives, that are mysteries. And I suppose that is one of the basic things, but you find more mysteries being written than almost anything else.
They're very popular.
Yeah,
they are. How do you make your way in such a crowded field?
It is difficult. It is difficult.
Yeah, well, I'll grant you that. It would have to be. Mm-hmm. But I certainly applaud your effort. So it's Shadows Over Bishop Hill, and it's available in Rock Island at the Artsy Bookshop. And
Bookworm. Artsy Bookworm.
Artsy Bookworm. Okay.
Yeah, it's a brand new shop.
Yeah.
I know we're going to be talking to her at some point. Yeah, that's.
And if you look up my name, marydavidsaver.com, you will get to my webpage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Mary, I congratulate you for not only turning out your first book, but finishing the second and maybe even thinking about a third.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, why not? But before we go, I want to go back to the business of talking to our three or four listeners. We would love to hear from you, and you do that by going to the computer, find one somewhere, and it's Contact Scribble. Just spell it out, Contact Scribble, period, 1014, at gmail.com. We invite you to comment on what you have heard on the program, give suggestions of where you'd like us to go. Be gentle there, will you, please? Topics. And then also, we'd like to hear your opinion of books that you have read, books that you would recommend to others. We are a little remiss on getting into book reviews, and we'll have to cure that. But you can help us at contactscribble, period, 1014, at gmail.com. Mary, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today. And good luck with the book.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that'll do it. I'm Don Wooten with Rebecca Wee, and we invite you to join us again when we come back for another Scribble.